Beer with Pleasant Strangers, episode 8. Hi, welcome to another episode of Beer with Pleasant Strangers. I'm joined today by my good friend Alton Hitchcock, who's sitting right here. Alton is he's a man of many talents. He's a dad, for one, which is a huge responsibility. He's a realtor, which I didn't even want to know what goes on there. And then he's a part-time philosopher. And then, on top of it all off, he is a homebrewer extraordinaire. And so I've been trying to get him to come sit down and have a podcast with me. And so he finally agreed. And he even brought some of his homebrew.
Yes.
Which we're going to try right here.
Right now.
But first, let's get to know you a little bit, Alton. Just tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you actually get started in craft beer?
It's a long time ago. I moved to Massachusetts to go to school back in 1995, and I had to get a job. So I got a job working at a brew pub that was right across the street from Fenway Park called Boston Beer Works. And I just waited table there for a couple of years, and they brewed on premise every single day. And so I got to know a lot of the brewers, got to taste a lot of beer. You know, up until that point, my exposure to beer had been, you know, Coors Light, Bud Light, you know, the classic, you know, stuff that we get here in California when you're in college. And that was pretty much the first time I'd ever tasted real beer. And then just sort of had a passion for it ever since then, always, you know, trying to find good beer and always wanted to brew myself. But it took a long time to actually, you know, pick up the kettle and start doing it.
Yeah, yeah. Real beer. So what was what was the beer that you first tasted? Like, so was it at the Boston Beer Works place? This was the place that you worked at?
Yeah, I don't know is the short answer to that question.
Yeah.
I mean, they always had 10 or 15 beers on tap, always a pale ale, always an IPA, and I kind of liked them all. I was just shocked by how different beer could be because it was so one-dimensional to me originally. And maybe the first year I was there, they hosted the Great American Beer Festival.
Oh.
And in Boston.
In Boston, yeah, okay.
And our brewery was serving beer, just tasters to people. And so as a server, I had to go to the Great American Beer Festival and serve beer for an afternoon. I ended up sitting next to the guy from Pete's Wicked Ale. I don't know if you've ever had that before.
I don't know if I have. Can't say that I have.
So Pete's Wicked Ale was this really dark beer that didn't taste very dark. It was just easy drinking, but it was made by this local Massachusetts guy. He was very famous in Boston at the time. And he just talked my ear off about home brewing and brewing beer. And, you know, the more beer you drink, the more interesting those conversations are.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I can tell you how many conversations I've struck up with random strangers after a couple of
pleasant
pints.
Random strangers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the name of this podcast and this show. So you can't think of any particular beer. What's one beer, though, that, I mean, that you, if you had to pick one that you could think of that you're like, that changed your mind about, like, a style or just about maybe beer in general? Like was there a moment when, like, you tried your first sour or your first IPA or something like that that you're like, oh, like, you figured out that you liked it?
I don't know. I think that still happens to me.
Yeah.
To this day, I can't point to something in particular. Certainly things like, you know, you think, I thought beer was one dimensional, then I had things like pale ales and IPAs, and it expanded my palate. But then I would have something like a sour for the first time and be like, oh my god, that's beer too.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I was recently in Belgium and had some goose and all kinds of different, you know,
and
just rocked my world. Just it continued to just open up more and more levels of beer.
Have you ever had a Goosemosa?
I haven't, but that sounds awesome.
It's a Goosemosa. Oh my god, it's so good. The stinkier the goose, the better it is. So you started getting into home brewing. About how long ago did you start getting into home brewing?
I think it's just over 3 years now.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I take it back. It's 4.
Yeah. And how many different beers do you think, could you guess at, that you've made?
I brew every single month, sometimes twice a month. So, you know, at least 30 times a year, at least 30 times a year, for 4 years, 120 different beers.
Wow.
I brew, yeah, so maybe 100.
Yeah, okay.
I brew some every once in a while. But, you know, it's the same one over and over.
Okay. And you've brewed all kinds of different styles and gone experimental, which we're going to...
That's what this is right here, yeah.
We'll find out a little bit about that in just a minute here. So what's one of the beers that you've made that you're most proud of?
I make a Citra Pale Ale, which I call my house beer. It's just kind of like a Sierra Nevada, which I just really love. It's easy drinking. It tastes good. It's a fan favorite.
And one time you cloned Pliny the Younger, as I recall.
I did, and then promptly lost all of it to a broken keg.
it was an expensive.
Yeah, well, I got one bottle for us to try. So that was like a $80 bottle of beer.
Yeah, that's him. See, take that, people on the secondary trading market, coming up with values for your beer. That's the actual cost of that one. So Tell us a little bit about the beer that you brought today.
Okay, so one of the things I fell in love with when I first was exposed to craft beer was fruit beers. And so the brewery I worked at used to make this blueberry ale, which was awesome. It was great for summertime. It was dangerously delicious. Ooh. And they did make something called watermelon ale. I have no idea how they made it because I didn't ask those questions back then. But I always wanted to make a watermelon ale. So that's what this is. It's a solid recipe I have for a blonde ale. Mm-hmm. But then, for me at least, watermelon is not the taste. The flavor of watermelon is not the way watermelon tastes.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, when I think watermelon flavor, I think of watermelon Jolly Ranchers. That's like the classic watermelon taste to me.
Okay.
So this is beer made with watermelon Jolly Ranchers.
Wait, actual watermelon Jolly Ranchers are in this beer?
Yes, there's a pound and a half of watermelon Jolly Ranchers in the 5 gallons that constituted this batch.
All right, there you go. So this is I mean, what would you call this then? This is a blonde ale. It's an adjunct that's in there, but it's not like exactly fruit because it's candy. Fruit candy.
It's really just sugar. Yeah,
it's a dry candied and double dry candied.
Yeah, I mean, I literally opened up 200 or so individual, you know, Jolly Ranchers, put them in a saucepan, melted them down with some water, turned it into a syrup, and then added it in secondary fermentation.
Was that very laborious?
I've got a great photograph of just like a mountain of candy wrappers.
A giant mountain of candy wrappers. Have you ever done with vanilla beans, right?
I do vanilla all the time and everything from porters to ales, but that's much easier.
Really?
Yeah, well, I'll make like a tincture.
Okay.
Take like a organic vanilla bean and just split it open and soak it in a little bit of vodka.
Okay.
And then add the vodka.
So you're not having to like cut like 500 vanilla beans or
it's
anything like
much
that.
Much more simple. Ah. This was more laborious.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so we've already been drinking a little bit, but if I may, I'm going to have a little more here.
Yeah, please.
And the fascinating thing I think about this beer is I wouldn't have guessed that it had watermelon Jolly Ranchers in it. I would have guessed that it had some kind of fruit in it. But I, not even necessarily watermelon. I kind of got like we were talking about melony kind of aspect. I mean, maybe like a little bit of honeydew because it's kind of got that sweetness. And it's not overly sweet and it's a little bit tart, which we were talking about.
Like I said, I think that's from all the sugar. It just makes it more dry. So you get sort of that more astringent feel on the back of your tongue.
It was pretty easy drinking. What did it finish out at?
I didn't take a gravity reading on this one, actually. Just messing around. The whole idea was to try to get something, and if it was tasty enough, then decide if I was going to make it in the summertime for people to actually enjoy.
So this could be Jolly Rancher liqueur, for all we know. We are imbibing.
Well, see, they make a cordial, a watermelon cordial, which I considered adding. That actually tastes a lot like watermelon, too. So I may try that in another batch.
Watermelon cordial. That's interesting. I wonder how you make that. Well, this is awesome. Thanks for bringing this. This is quite good. When I heard the description, I was like, okay, that just sounds really wild and experimental, and I would totally try that for science at the very least. And I like it quite a bit. Like,
good.
I wasn't expecting. I didn't really have like expectations per se, but like, it's actually pretty good. It's pretty crushable. Like, it seems very refreshing.
Yeah, I think on a hot summer day, it would be good.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was the whole idea.
Yeah.
So I make a lot of. I make beer every month. And I brew so much because as something I do for my clients, I'm a real estate agent. When I sell a house, the client, I give them this really nice growler. I didn't bring one with me, but, and then I fill it for them every single month just to keep in contact with them. And I told a lot of my clients that I was making this watermelon ale. And the number one response was, that sounds disgusting. So I was trying it out on you guys first.
There's not a whole lot of watermelon beers out there. Like, there's Watermelon Dorado that Ballast Point made, which is like a double IPA, which is like freaking strong. And then there's Heller High Watermelon, 21st
Amendment.
I like
Amendment, that one, actually.
Which is pretty good. And I can't think of other watermelon ales off the top of my head other than those two. So it's kind of a very niche beer. And that was going to be one of my next questions was going to be, if anyone wanted to try your beer, how would they get it? But you just sort of alluded to the fact that they just need to buy a house.
Yeah, I mean, I don't distribute, obviously. Well, I distribute, but, you know, just to friends and family and clients.
So if you're in the, you know, San Diego or Orange County or even LA area and you want to buy a house, I mean, consider if you buy one with him, you get free beer every month.
That's true.
For, I don't know, apparently.
Until I go out of business.
Until you kick the bucket and go out of business. Awesome. So what is, talking about other like breweries now that you've tried, like you do a lot of home brewing, but obviously you still drink beer and try new beers from time to time, I'm sure. What's a brewery that you've tried recently that you you really like?
I'll go back to my old favorite. You know, my favorite brewery in San Diego County is Lost Abbey.
Oh, Lost Abbey. Okay.
I just like the fact that they have, you know, traditional Abbey beers, yeah. And then also, you know, with the port brewing side, they have more, you know, traditional California beers. So I feel like you can get everything there.
And they also have the hop concept now with mm-hmm. all the Dank and Sticky and Citrus and Piney, and those are delicious.
Yeah.
So, what's one beer that everyone should have from Lost Abbey?
Oh gosh.
Or if you would pick one to try to
I don't know, what's your favorite?
Introduce someone. From Lost Abbey? I actually tend to like their sour, spontaneous beers more. So I would say that in recent times, Veritas 18, which was a redux of Veritas 15, which was basically like a spontaneously fermented ale with, I think Veritas 15 had peaches and nectarines in it. And then 18 is the same recipe, but they added apricots as well. That one... I was super jonesed on that one. I like that one a lot. That's not exactly one that you could just pull off the shelf. So if you want to pull one off the shelf, I'd say Frambois de Amarosa, which you can find on the shelf most places in San Diego, or Red Poppy. Both of those are, I think, fantastic.
So these what are your favorite questions are tough for me because this is going to be sacrilege to a lot of people listening to this probably, but I just like beer.
Yeah.
I can drink Coors Light. It has a place in the world. I you know, if it's the 4th of July and I'm standing outside at a barbecue for 6 hours and I want to drink 12 beers, I'm not going to drink 12 beers from the Lost Abbey. I mean, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So I like it all. It just has a place. It just depends on what I'm eating or who I'm with or what time of year it is. So
yeah, absolutely. So what's something like, what do you think what do you think of the craft beer industry from what you know of it? Where do you think it's going next? You have any
I don't know. My best guess would be that it'll take a little bit of a hit at some point. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been a lot of, but I could be totally wrong too. I mean, there's so much hype, particularly where we live here in Southern California. Like,
there's a ton.
How many more breweries can we build? At what point is it saturated?
Well, I was just listening to SD Beer Talk podcast where they talked just about that, and they had a whole panel of people on. It was kind of interesting because they were bringing up the whole point of how localized beer is, and there's still plenty of communities in San Diego that don't even have like really a local brew pub or a brewery at all, and how those are basically untapped markets in the sense that that's where it's kind of revolved back to is this localization where people will all go to support their little small local brewery. But they were saying that is there going to be another brewery that's going to grow to become the next Stone or the next, you know, Coronado or something like that? That seemed unlikely. Just the empire building in terms of that saturation of like the nationwide distribution footprint model type thing, it seems to be like changing.
I think we're already seeing some diversification too. There's already, I was just reading about the other day, and they've been there for a little while. I forget what they're called, but there's like a craft sake house in San Marcos.
Oh.
So like I think you're already seeing some splintering where like, you know, beer is cool. And people are even traveling here now to go on like beer tours and stuff from out of state. But you're already seeing some splintering, I think, into other things.
There's a craft sake brewery, distillery. I'm not sure what the correct term is there. That's in Mira Mesa. But apparently sake is an extremely laborious, time-consuming process. Yeah. And when they released their first batch, they just sold out of it like so fast and they were like, crap, we need to make more. That's Kelton Premuda from Stone, who's actually, that's one of his side grinds, but I forget the name of it.
There's a one here that's in North County that's in either Escondido or San Marcos.
I'll have to check that out, because it also seems that craft distilleries, craft spirits are kind of booming now.
Yeah, there's a new whiskey maker here too, someplace in North County. This is a very informative podcast right now. This thing someplace, I don't know what it's called, but it's good.
There's a few. Well, Ballast Point, when they got bought by Constellation Brands, the original owners of Ballast Point retained the spirits brand and rebranded it as Cutwater. And they have just recently finished construction of their facility down in like Mira Mesa area, I think.
Yeah.
And apparently it's huge, and I want to go there, and I haven't gone there yet. So that's getting wasted with pleasant strangers on.
It's a whole different website.
Devil share and stuff. So all right. Well, hey, how can people listening to this go find you on the wide world of the internet and stuff?
What's brew.com or you can find me on Instagram at what's brew.
Okay, cool. That'll all be in the show notes. So next we're going to do a couple little tastings here.
Let's do it.
So we're going to take a quick break and pour ourselves some of this beer.
Are we rolling? Awesome.
All right, so we're back. We are going to have a couple of tastings. I whipped out some cans to... I don't know if these can compete with watermelon. What was the name of your homebrew, by the way?
That one's called Jolly Watermelon Ale.
Jolly Watermelon Ale. So I'm not sure if we can compete... If that will compete with Jolly Watermelon Ale, but we'll definitely try. So this one's called Citrus Mella from Bergen. I realize I'm doing a terrible job of pouring it because I'm pouring it directly into the glass. But
here, camera guy needs a shot.
My other hand is holding the microphone. So what are you gonna do? I just need to get those microphone.
Thank you.
I need to get those robot looking microphone arm thingies. Okay. Put it on my wish list for podcast gear equipment.
So this is just a
pale ale, Bergen. They have the hops on here. Yeah. Citra and Denali.
Yeah. Citra is my favorite hops.
And then they got the malts on here too. Got Two Row and Fleet Wheat. This was their very first can release that Bergen ever did. They did two cans. This was the first. This was one. And the other one was called Everybody's Juicin' IPA. And this was the one I preferred out of the both of them. And it's been a couple days since I cracked one because it's got to crack one every a couple days for science. And this is actually my last can, so... This is the end. It was actually canned on May 10th. Today, when we were shooting this, is May 31st, so it is literally 3 weeks old.
And this is from Bergen.
Mm-hmm. Carlsbad, California, brand new brewery. Mm-hmm. Still, testing things out. But those guys they know what they're up doing. The facility they've got is awesome. Room to grow, but not like crazy.
And is it busy over there when you go in?
Oh, it's always busy. It's so busy every time I go in. It's a spacious place, but it's packed to the gills every time I go. But it's great. They make great beer. And actually, they recently put on a grisette. I was told I need to go try the grisette. I haven't tried it yet.
And do they have food, or is it just a tasting?
They have food trucks. Yeah, they have food trucks, and people come back up there.
So I thought Carlsbad was really strict on tasting rooms.
I don't know. I mean, Pizza Port, got a couple pizza ports there.
But not tasting rooms, right? Those are restaurants, so it's different.
Well, Bressy, is a restaurant attached to a whole brewery.
Yeah.
And then it's the same kind of similar situation in Carlsbad, or in the Carlsbad downtown. But now there's a couple of breweries there. There's one called Ruler. There's another one called Wise Guys. There's Bergen. There's... I think they want to say there's another one that's relatively new. So maybe there's an ordinance that changed. I'm not sure. I don't know. I'm not an expert in Carlsbad law, but you actually would know a lot more probably than I do because you...
I was buying homebrew supplies today at the Carlsbad beer shop or something like that. It's a really kind of crappy... Okay, I shouldn't say that. I don't want to hurt anyone's business. It's a smaller brew supply shop, and they have a tasting room in the back, but the woman there was saying that they can't open it as a tasting room because... of some ordinance in Carlsbad.
Interesting. I don't know. But I'm out by the... so Bergen's out by the airport, and it seems like anything goes. It's just party central out there. I mean, people just,
getting crazy. Getting
crazy stuff all over the place. Crazy manufacturing
flying
businesses.
Places.
Crazy helicopter training schools and flight simulators and crazy biotech pharma companies. Just crazy all the time.
You can't do any of that without booze.
Yeah, it's true. You need booze. Booze is important. So what do you think?
I like it. Like I said, Citra is always one of my... favorite hops. I just like and this does not disappoint. It's juicy and sort of tropical. I like that.
I agree. I really like this one more than... The reason I like this one more than Everybody's Juicing is because this has a little more savory quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing is this one has developed, as our cameraman was just pointing out, when these cans were fresh, and I cracked one, right away of each, they had some very vegetable-y characteristics, like broccoli and carrots and stuff like that. Not bad. Just like they're just very. They fell into that very kind of pithy, a little bit bitter. Fairly bitter, and then just more of the savory side. Not a lot of sweetness. Not a lot of dankness per se. This though seems to have developed now into something that's.
I really like even more. It's got like the pine, a little bit of the pine cone, a little bit of like the flower field.
I don't taste any dankness. Vegetable in there right now, but.
And the next, they're going to do a couple more cans here coming up soon, so.
Yeah, but there is something get on it. Sort of salty almost at the in the back end, right?
Like yeah, a little bit. I like it. This is my favorite of the two. They have a bunch of other beers that they do on draft, obviously, that are they'll have to try sometime. Sometime we'll go there. They I did actually on a podcast episode previously. Sean, if you remember Sean, if you tuned into that episode, Small Pour Sean on Instagram, we gave him like a giant snifter goblet and gave him a tiny thimbleful of beer in it. He and I tried Universal Secret, which was their collaboration with Stone, which they called a zero IBU IPA.
So they added all the hops in secondary or at the... So typically when you brew, the hops you add into the boil in the early stages are considered your bittering hops. Mm-hmm. And then the things you add later in the boil or after are aromatics. You know.
I have to go back and listen to my own episode and find out because now my brain is like so far disconnected. I'm going to have to edit this whole part.
What else did you bring here today?
So the other one, the next one we're going to do is it's actually a collaboration between McKellar San Diego, Alpine, which is now actually a subsidiary of Green Flash, still a craft brewery, and then Arts District, which I believe is located in Los Angeles. I had to double check, but the allegedly based upon the recipe for Nelson, Alpine Nelson, if you know what that is, that's a freakishly delicious Nelson hopped IPA that's freaking, it's just so good. And
is good.
They did this. This was the very first can release that McKellar San Diego did, and it was very popular and deservedly so. And they redid it recently, so I got some more cans. We're gonna try that next.
All right.
And it'd be interesting because I literally just had Nelson last night because they rebrewed it at Alpine. Everybody was flipping out about it too because they were like, "Oh my god, like it's back!" Like, I don't know when was the last time that Alpine brewed Nelson. I mean, it seems like eons to beer nerds.
Is Nelson your favorite Alpine? I'm partial to Duet myself.
I think Nelson might be my favorite Alpine of their hoppy beers. Mm-hmm. Exponential Hoppiness is freaking good too, but it's got like that oak. It's got that oak woodsy kind of flavor that sometimes is great, and other times I'm not super into. I think Nelson probably is my favorite. And my favorite, I don't know, have you ever had any of their like non hoppy beers? Like, have you ever had any sours from Alpine?
Oh, I haven't had any of their sours.
I've only had like one or two sours. But you've had like Odin's Raven? Yeah, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Had, I think the one I had last night was one of my faves. We had a rye whiskey barrel aged Odin's Raven that was...
Well, I just like rye whiskey, so...
So good. So good. Did you listen to the little episode I did where we tasted rye barrel aged Vietnamese Speedway Stout? Rye whiskey barrel aged?
No, I totally should.
Check it out. There's a video of
check
it, too.
Out.
Check
what
it
number
out.
Is it?
Check it out. I don't remember. I've only done like half a
for
dozen
those
of
you
these.
Tuning in, we don't know the webisode number. We have no idea what breweries we're talking about or where they're located.
But it'll be in the show notes. I'll go figure it out later.
So yeah, you can't just listen. You have to read.
That's right. If you're listening, go to beerwithpleasantstrangers.com and check it out there. Everything's there. Or you can follow us on YouTube. Just search Beer with Pleasant Strangers. There's a whole YouTube channel for that and all that jazz. Okay, so next up, Devil's Triangle. No need to rinse your glass. I know it's sacrilege and heresy.
Not
and all
for
that.
Me. It's good.
I'm gonna set down my my microphone and do it right this time.
Do it.
Do it right. Do it.
See how steady Joel's hand is? No judgment. No judgment. Some judgment. Okay, hey, I'm going to wait for you. Camera guy.
You're getting the yeasty turbid.
Yeah. If you drink too much of the dregs, you'll get the scoots.
Cheers, Aaron. Aaron's our camera guy. He's behind the scenes, but we like him to come and drink the beer with us too.
Yeah. All right, let's do this.
So yeah, it's a rye India pale ale brewed with Nelson hops.
Okay.
Wow. So there you go.
Well, it's got a really good nose, kind of spicy. I'm sure that's from the rye.
Yeah, it's definitely from the rye. What's different about this one is it smells kind of creamy. I don't know, I get this like little creamy.
Yeah, I mean, it almost has like a like the start of a creamsicle sort of flavor to me, and then like
it has the promise of a creamsicle.
Yeah, and then it fades into something more floral, but yeah, totally.
And I have to say, yeah, this is dang, this is freaking dang.
That's good.
Freaking dang, all these swear words. Oh my gosh, I'm going to have to edit them. Yeah, this is really good. I had Nelson last night. I think Nelson was better, but possibly because it was super fresh. It was only a couple days. This is a couple weeks now, but I mean, still well within the tolerance for this style. Mikkeller's big deal is they're really trying to crank out each week a new, totally different, but you know, some kind of hazy hoppy beer, basically. So I've done a whole bunch. This is the only one they've repeated, though. And it was, I think this is the best one.
Hazy hoppy, is that a California thing?
It's technically like a New England thing. They call it a New England style IPA. It's like this kind of unfiltered, like hazy, sure.
So
turbid
it's more like
looking.
Treehouse, like, you know, that kind of.
It's exactly like Treehouse or Trillium, if you've had anything from those guys. It seems to be something that was pioneered on the East Coast, and now it has made its way to the West Coast and become a tiny bit of a craze here. Have you had anything from Monkish? Monkish?
Yes, many times.
Monkish, yeah. Well, good stuff. Those guys have cornered that whole scene here. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I don't think anyone's doing it with the level of consistency that they're doing it.
Yep.
And on the high level of quality that they're doing it. But this is pretty good.
Yeah, that's excellent.
This is excellent. There's a few other breweries that are definitely in the game. Pure Project, Alvarado Street. There's a couple other Mumford up in Los Angeles. Down here in San Diego, we've got Modern Times has kind of made some forays, but they're kind of marching to the beat of their own drummer, doing their own thing.
Yep.
Like they're not trying to follow the trend so much, it seems.
I like their beers, but they're more in a commercial vein in my
I would say they are. Yeah, I would say that they're the most likely brewery in San Diego to expand successfully to a multi-state / national footprint.
So something like this, I don't know if this is going to appeal to... I love it, but I think, you know, you're going to find a lot of people who it's not their cup of tea.
It's
not going to be sitting on the shelf in Albertsons anytime soon.
No. And this was brewery-only release, and it sold out, like, in 48 hours or something like that. I think that with Mikkeller's specifically... Mikkeller's actually in an interesting spot, I feel like. Have you been there yet? It's in Mira Mesa.
No, I've not been there.
It's in the old Alesmith Brewery.
Oh, okay.
So Alesmith had a brewery down there for many years, and they finally ramped up to expand, and... They were like, we're going to expand it to this ginormous facility. Have you been to Alesmith's new facility?
Yep.
Yeah, you've seen it. It's just huge. It's gigantic. There's a museum to Tony Gwynn inside of it. There's like, there's a barrel-aged speakeasy inside the tasting room.
Yeah.
Like, it's huge. It's vast. And when they were ready to move into their new facility, I guess Alesmith hit up Mikkeller because they had helped them formulate their first Beer Geek recipe and kind of nailed down that coffee stout style that they became famous for. And Mikkeller never had an actual brewery.
Hmm.
They were gypsy brewers. They brewed at other people's facilities and brought their recipes
around. So they were able
around.
To just step right into a fully functioning brewery?
Fully functioning brewery and even like come in with employees that already knew the system that like just totally like went to work for Mikkeller and stuff like that. In fact, the head brewer, Bill Batten, came from Alesmith and he just left. Now I believe he's at SD Tap Room. He's just transitioned over there.
Hmm.
And now they're doing all sorts of collaborations with other breweries. There's a homebrew guy out in Florida. His name is Corey. And he goes by Three Sons. And he's opening his own brewery down in like Miami area, Dania Beach or Dania Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a collaboration with them. And there's all these other guys doing collaborations with them now.
Come on, we need more of that. Guys working together.
Yeah. What's this interesting kind of stuff? Like now the collaborations become these whole like, fascinating things.
Sure.
It's like what one brewer is known for, a particular kind of style that they've really like nailed, or they've done some really weird, interesting things, and then they come to some other brewery and they collaborate on a system that's different, you know?
Yeah, for me, the collaboration has less to do with the beer they produce and more to do with what the other brewers pick up from each other so that moving forward, what they make might be different in some way.
Yeah.
So, well, and it seems like because beer has only been a science for what, maybe two centuries, not even?
I mean, where we actually understood, you know, what yeast was and what it was doing. Yeah, it's not long.
When was yeast actually even discovered? I don't even know.
Well, I don't know the dates, but yeah, it's modern history, certainly.
Yeah. Like, that's why the Bavarian Purity Law, the Reinheitsgebot, like, only listed water, barley, and hops as the ingredients for beer, because they didn't know that yeast existed.
Sure.
Till they found out, and then they added yeast to that list.
I think it's still, like, Ankerstein who does, like, open vat fermentations, like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that's the history.
Cool ships. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, we were talking earlier about sour beers and stuff, and it's if you go too far back in time, all beer was sour. All beer was spontaneously fermented in whatever vessel it was in, you right. know? They just reused the same old barrel over and over and over again and just put stuff in it, and yep. it turned into, because they had whatever culture in it that they liked, and it made the beer for wherever it was, true micro breweries, you know?
Yeah, I was in Belgium last year, and there was some stories about some of the old monasteries that when the Germans came through, the monks actually took some of the barrels and just buried them. And after the war, they were able to dig them back up, and the cultures were still alive in some of them, so they were able to go back to what they used to be, even though they took a long period off.
That's gnarly. So they literally saved the barrels by... Right.
Basically, they saved their, you know, the key recipe. As much as, you know, we'll talk about hops and the grain bill here, the thing that really gives beer its flavor more than anything else is the yeast. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's the most important part, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
That's pretty fascinating. Well, where did you go when you were in Belgium? What all did you visit?
I couldn't tell you everything. Every major open abbey and mm-hmm. then every bar in between those abbeys.
Yes.
I stopped taking photos at some time because it became ridiculous. I felt as though I couldn't share it with people or they would think I had a problem. But I was only there for a brief period of time, for like 9 days or something. So
you didn't get to visit like Cantillon or like Dreyfontein? You did?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
You went to Cantillon. Yeah. Okay. Yep. What was that like?
Cool. I mean, it's great to see. You know, you drink the beer, then to stand in the place where it's actually made is it's the history all to itself. It was fun.
Well, I haven't been to Cantillon myself, obviously, but I've heard people liken it to being like kind of a dirty attic. Like, it's just so old. And
yeah, I mean, here's the thing. It's not the United States. Everything in, you know, here in Southern California, our oldest brewery is, you know, probably...
It's Anchor.
Yeah. Yeah. So how old is that?
I don't know.
50 years
30,
old?
40, 50? I don't know.
I'm stretching.
Look it up.
I have no idea, but
we gotta find
that's
out.
The thing. Like, to say your brewery is 50 years old in Belgium would get you laughed at. Their parking lot is 50 years old.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're the bricks. And someone said to me, the staircase in this building is older than your country. So that's pretty...
that's awesome. Right. Only in Europe, right? You can go, like, find a bridge that's from the Roman Empire right. and be like, oh, this bridge is older than... Christ, almost. Ooh. Like, I was actually talking to Bill Benzel. You know Bill Benzel?
Nope.
Yeah, I have to meet him sometime. I need to get him on the podcast. Bill, if you're listening, I want to do a podcast with you.
Come on out.
But I talked to him recently. Someone was telling me that he had a crazy great story about getting into beer, and so I asked him, hey, tell me about that. And he was saying, like, it was in the like early 70s, he had to go on a business trip to Brussels. And he didn't know anything about Brussels and didn't know what to do. And so he just asked, like, the concierge at the hotel, like, hey, what should I do? Where should I go? Give me, like, a little street map or something and tell me where I should go. And the concierge did and told him, take a little walking tour of Brussels. And he did. And he, on his walking tour, wandered directly into a lambic festival.
And lucky guy.
Didn't know what the hell lambic was. But all these Belgians, like, were eager to, like, try their English-speaking abilities on him. And they all... gave him beer, and like he tried all this beer and brought home all these lambics with him in like the 70s, and then set up a situation where he was bringing it back all the time, like, and he's saying, like to have that be your introduction to not American adjunct lager beer seems so radical to me.
It would be shocking to have that experience in the 70s and then come back to the United States and find, you know,
be like, what,
four different beers here that are
drink?
All
yeah. like yeah there's Schlitz. There's like little Kings was one of the things that my uncle told me he loved to drink. Some little cream ale that used to come in bottles.
Yeah, we think we're really advanced here, and we are in some capacity. You know, we've taken beer into a different direction than the Europeans have, but I have a good friend who's from Belgium. Hi, Steven, if you're watching. And, you know, he would just laugh. You know, what we think is really advanced beer, they've been doing for centuries. They're
true craftsmen.
Yeah.
I think it's just so funny. I think it's fascinating because the American beer scene is now leading the world in the sense of innovation.
Yeah, sure.
But we've hit this number, and I forget what the actual number is now, of the total number of craft breweries inside of the United States is like over, it's like over 5,000 now. But per capita with the population, it's still lower than it was before Prohibition.
Really?
So the number is higher than it was before Prohibition, finally. And that happened like a year or something ago. But the population of the country has like almost tripled since that time. So the amount of breweries has only just now reached the number. This goes back to the saturation thing we were talking about earlier. It's only like recently eclipsed that number of what it was, but it hasn't eclipsed the same per capita number. So it's kind of interesting. It's like there's been an explosion of growth, and there's a... It seems like the U.S. craft beer industry is kind of leading the rest of the world in the let's break with all tradition and just throw a bunch of Jolly Ranchers in our beer and find out what happens.
You're welcome, world.
Whereas the Germans were super strict, you know, beer is right. Only these three things. Oh, whoop, four things. We didn't know about yeast, but now we do, and it's only four things. And but really, it's just it's spontaneous fermentation is how it was born, right? Now it's become a science.
Well, look, I'll go back to what I said originally. There's a place for all of it. Mm-hmm. I'm open to all of it. I love the traditional beers, and I love the new stuff too. Let's keep experimenting. Let's find out what we can make.
Yeah. Amen. Well, thanks for joining me again.
My pleasure.
These are tasty.
Thanks for having me, Joel.
Yeah. Cheers. Oh, you need more.
Yeah, and let me cheers with the final.
Do you want the yeasty turbid turds?
Yep, sounds good. There I'll take go. The turbid turd. Turbid turds? What is that?
Turbid turds.
Oh, turbid turds.
It's one of my beer poop euphemisms. It was the treehouse yeasty turbid turds. Is my joke. You know how people say you can get the Schlitz shits or
you can. Yeah, you know. I'm dead. That happens.
Yeah, or the Stella Artois glitter bomb flush rush. That's what I call it. I just had a fun time making up a bunch of beer poop euphemisms. More on that on some later podcast.
I am so glad we ended my podcast this way.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks again for tuning in. Thanks for watching if you're watching. And remember, you can watch the episodes on beerwithpleasantstrangers.com. Find out in the show notes. And we'll see you next time. In the meantime, don't be a stranger.
Don't be a stranger.